A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. As you know, backups are something that I take seriously. And I feel like we've finally reached a golden point at which it's becoming fairly easy to set up the backups that you might want and need because of, again, agentic AI. That a lot of doing effective backups, there sometimes are GUIs for it, but more often than not, if we're talking about backing up Linux systems, it just comes down to knowing the syntax for the backup utility, setting up a cron job, or whatever the fancier things people run nowadays are, service jobs, and basically letting it run. Maybe doing a test, a restore, which is something people always forget to do. But now that we have AI agents that can do the hard work for us, it's created an opportunity for us to finally put backups in place that we might know that should be there, and always creates that slightly nervous feeling of, wait, do I have a backup running for this? And if so, is it actually going to be any good? Because those two are not always the same thing. Here's what I'd like to ask your opinion about, talking about Linux backups. And I'd love to ask about the best tools available for backing up an entire server. I have a home server running Ubuntu. And this is a Docker host container. So you've got running on top of it different processes. The Ubuntu itself is doing some backup stuff, running some backup jobs. But you've got different Docker containers. Those Docker containers have different stores on them. You've got some other things that are not running in Docker. And the challenge which we talked about in Android backup is there comes a point in time where it stops being feasible to back up just what you need. The ideal case, arguably, is looking at a Linux environment, a server, like a kind of ephemeral environment where, okay, if I lose it, fine, I'll provision a new Ubuntu server, no big deal. I'll set up my credentials and I'll just move my containers and my volumes, all that stuff, back in. That's fine until you get to the point where your configurations and scripts and Docker stuff is spread all over the system, and that would just become a huge hassle. So you start looking to something akin to full system backup. The classic cloning model is really heavy. I'm talking about block level backup here, and doesn't support incremental. Those are kind of the nuclear options, as it were, but they also involve copying over the whole thing afresh every time, which is very inefficient. So file-based backup is a bit more approachable. And if you wanted to do an incremental covering really everything on your Linux server, what would you recommend in terms of tooling that would allow you to do that, to move it across the network, say to something like an NFS mount maybe a second copy going off to some cloud offsite, and you wanted to put a bit of thought maybe at the start or every few months into what you need to back up. And there's always going to be some layer of what you don't. That's something as well I know about Linux file systems. There are directories where that data will never be useful. The goal, or the gold standard objective in any backup approach for the whole OS, is to get to that point where if the whole server, you know, got destroyed physically, I'm talking, let's say hardware failure, and you're reprovisioning the server, you can just start from scratch and just move your stuff over seamlessly, and everything just kind of resumes working. For that kind of a full server backup, what would you recommend in terms of the CLI to sync backup data onto the target? And what are those baseline directories that we should know about if you're administering a Linux system? That you at least have a heads up that this is the part of the file system you can safely ignore in your backup jobs.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about Linux server backups, specifically for his Ubuntu Docker host, and he's noticed something that's been quietly shifting under our feet. the agentic AI stuff is actually changing what's practical now. You can describe what you want, and an agent can stitch together the rsync flags and the system timer and the exclusion patterns without you memorizing man pages. But the question he's really asking is, if you want a proper file-based incremental backup of an entire Linux server, something that can survive total hardware loss and let you rebuild without weeks of grief, what tooling actually delivers that? What directories do you safely ignore? And how do you think about moving that data across a network to an N? FSS mount or off-site cloud storage?
Before we dive in, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today, which feels appropriate given we're talking about AI agents and backups. The model writing the script is the kind of thing that could also write your backup scripts.
There's something poetic about that. All right, so let's get into it. Daniel's framing is interesting because he's identified the exact tension that makes server backups hard. He starts with the ephemeral ideal. Treat the server like cattle, not a pet. Provision a fresh Ubuntu box. Move your containers and volumes back. Done. But then he immediately catches himself, because the reality is that configuration drifts. Your Docker Compose files live in /home/Daniel/Docker. Your systemd unit files are in etc/system/system. You tweaked something in etc/system.confem 6 months ago and forgot. Your cron jobs, sorry, your system timers are scattered. The just reprovision approach works until you realize you've been hand-tuning the server for 2 years, and you didn't document half of it.
That's exactly the problem. The cattle versus pets distinction was always a bit aspirational. Most home servers and even plenty of production servers end up as what I'd call, they're not quite pets you've named, but you'd definitely notice if they disappeared.
I'm stealing that. So Daniel's question is, if we accept that we need a proper file-based incremental backup of essentially the whole system, what does that look like? And I think we should start with the tooling, because the tooling landscape has genuinely improved in ways that make this conversation different than it would have been even 3 or 4 years ago.
It really has. And I want to frame this around 3 tools, because these are the ones that have emerged as the serious contenders for exactly this use case. Board backup, Restic, and Copia. Each of them handles deduplication, compression, encryption, and incremental backups. Each of them can push to remote storage over SSH or to cloud object storage. But they have meaningfully different philosophies, and which one you pick changes how you think about your backup workflow.
Before you go deep on each one, give me the 30-second version of what they all share, because I think that shared foundation is actually the answer to half of Daniel's question. He mentioned the old cloning model, DD, Clonezilla, block-level copies, and how they don't do incremental. These 3 tools all solve that.
So the shared architecture is what's called content-addressable deduplication. Instead of copying files whole every time, these tools chunk your data into variable-sized pieces, hash each chunk, and only store chunks they haven't seen before. When you run a backup, they scan your file system, figure out which chunks are new, and only upload those. The result is that your first backup takes a while. It's copying everything, but every subsequent backup is fast because it's only pushing the changes. And because of deduplication, if you have the same file in 3 different places, it's only stored once. If you move a file to a different directory, the next backup doesn't re-upload it. It just updates the metadata that says this chunk now lives at this path.
That's the part that makes whole server backups practical. Without deduplication, you'd be storing multiple copies of every system, binary, every library, every Docker image layer. With it, your backup repository might actually be smaller than your live data.
I've seen cases where a terabyte of live data fits into 300 gigabytes of repository after deduplication and compression. And that's before we even talk about incremental. Once the initial snapshot is done, your daily backup might be a few hundred megabytes.
Okay, so let's go through them. This is the one I've used the most, and it's the one that probably has the most mindshare in the home server community.
Borg is the elder statesman here. It's been around since about 2015. It's written in Python with performance-critical parts in C, and it was designed from the ground up for exactly this use case: efficient, encrypted, deduplicated backups. The key architectural decision in Borg is that it's a push model with a dedicated repository format. You run Borg on the machine you're backing up. It connects to a remote machine over SSH. where Borg is also installed, and it writes to a Borg repository, which is just a directory full of chunk files and indexes. That repository is not a mirror of your file system. You can't browse it with LSS. You interact with it exclusively through Borg commands: Borg list, Borg extract, Borg mount.
That's both a strength and a weakness. The strength is that Borg can do things a simple file mirror can't. Compression, encryption, append-only mode, so ransomware can't delete your old backups. The weakness is that you're dependent on Borg to recover your data. If Borg stops being maintained, you've got a problem.
That's a fair concern, but Borg has been actively maintained for a decade, and the repository format is well documented. There are third-party tools that can read Borg repositories. It's not a black box. The other thing about Borg is that its deduplication is excellent. It uses a rolling hash algorithm called BooJash to split files into variable-length chunks, which means it handles things like log files where new lines are appended at the end. Only the final chunk changes, everything else is already stored. Compare that to fixed-size chunking, where appending one byte at the start of a file shifts everything and forces re-upload of the entire file. Borg handles that gracefully.
For Daniel's use case, backing up an Ubuntu Docker host, Borg has one feature that's particularly relevant. You can mount a Borg archive as a FuseC file system. So if you need to restore a single Docker volume or a single config file from 3 weeks ago, you don't have to extract the entire backup. You just mount the archive, browse to the file, and copy it out.
Borg mount is one of those features that you don't appreciate until you need it, and then it's the difference between a 5-minute restore and an hour of waiting. Now, Borg's main limitation is that it's designed for a single machine backing up to a single repository. If you have multiple servers, you can back them all up to the same repository, but Borg doesn't handle concurrent writes to the same repo. You need to sequence your backups or use separate repos. For a home server setup like Daniel's, that's probably fine, but it's worth knowing.
That's Borg. What about RESTIC?
RESTIC is the newcomer that's gained a lot of traction. It's written in Go, which means it's a single static binary. No Python dependencies, no C extensions to compile. You download one file, put it in your path, and it works. That simplicity extends to its architecture. RESTIC supports a much wider range of backends than Borg: local directory, SFTP, Amazon S3, Backblaze B2, Google Cloud Storage, Azure Blob Storage, even rClone as a backend. You're not limited to SSH to a machine that also has RESTIC installed. You can push directly to Cloud Object Storage.
That's a meaningful difference for the offsite copy Daniel mentioned. With Borg, your offsite strategy typically involves backing up to a local machine over SSH, then syncing that repository somewhere else. With RESTIC, you can point it directly at Backblaze B2 or an S3 compatible bucket and skip the intermediate step.
And RESTIC's repository format is also simpler than Borg's. It stores data as pack files in a content addressable structure, and the format is well documented. The trade-off is that RESTIC's deduplication isn't quite as sophisticated as Borg's. It uses a fixed chunk size rather than content-defined chunking, so it doesn't handle insertions in the middle of files as gracefully. In practice, for most workloads, the difference is small. But if you have a lot of large files that get modified in place, database files, VM disk images, Borg's variable chunking can be significantly more efficient.
There's also the pruning question. Both Borg and RESTIC need periodic maintenance to clean up old chunks that are no longer referenced by any snapshot. Borg's prune can be slow on large repositories. RESTIC's prune was historically even slower. It was kind of infamous for this, but they've made major improvements in the last couple of years. RESTIC now has a rewrite of the prune operation that's dramatically faster.
I saw the benchmarks on that. The old prune on a repository with a few hundred snapshots could take hours. The new implementation brings it down to minutes. It was a complete re-architecture of how RESTIC tracks which blobs are in use. For Daniel's use case, if he's keeping daily snapshots for a month and weekly snapshots going back 6 months, prune performance actually matters. You don't want your maintenance operation taking longer than your backup.
Then there's Copia, which is the newest of the three. I know less about this one. What's its deal?
Copia is interesting because it was designed from the start with a client-server architecture and a strong focus on performance. It's also written in Go, single binary, supports a wide range of storage backends, S3, B2, Azure, Google Cloud, SFTP, WebDAVI, even RockClone. But the big differentiator is that Copia maintains a local cache of metadata that makes browsing and restoring extremely fast. With Borg and Restic, listing snapshots or browsing files requires querying the remote repository, which can be slow if it's across the network. Copia keeps an index locally, so operations feel instant.
That's a quality of life thing that matters more than people realize. When you're trying to find which backup has the version of a config file you need, waiting 30 seconds per snapshot to list contents adds up.
Copia also handles its maintenance, what it calls snapshot GC and content compaction, automatically and in the background. You don't need to schedule a separate prune job, it just does it. And its compression is configurable per directory, so you can use heavier compression for log files, and skip compression entirely for already compressed data, like images or video.
If you're starting fresh in 2026, and you want to back up your entire Ubuntu Docker host, which one do you pick?
I think the honest answer is that all three will do the job, and the differences are in the details that matter to your specific setup. If you want maximum storage efficiency and you're backing up to a machine you control over SSS, Borg is probably still the best. Its deduplication is the gold standard. If you want to push directly to cloud object storage and you value simplicity, one binary, no dependencies, Restic is compelling. If you want the fastest browsing and restore experience, and you like the idea of maintenance happening automatically, Copia is worth a serious look.
For Daniel specifically, he mentioned an NFS mount as a target, and a second copy going off-site to cloud storage. That shapes the recommendation. Borg doesn't natively support cloud object storage. You need to use something like BorgBase or Sync.net, which are hosted Borg repositories, or you'd roll your own with an SSH target and then sync. Restic and Copia can both write directly to S3 or B2, which simplifies the off-site piece.
NFS is an interesting target choice. All three tools can write to an NFSS mount. You just point them at the mount point as a local path. But there's a caveat with Borg. Borg uses file locking on its repository, an NFSS. Locking has historically been, let's say, unreliable. If you're the only client writing to that Borg repo, it's probably fine. But if you ever want multiple machines backing up to the same NFS share, you're going to have locking issues. Restic and Copia handle concurrent access better because they use a different locking model. Restic uses lock files in the repository. Copia uses a content addressable approach that naturally avoids conflicts.
That's the kind of detail that bites you 6 months in when you add a second server, and suddenly, your backups start failing mysteriously.
Those are the worst kind of failures because they're intermittent and hard to diagnose. Alright, so let's talk about the actual command line workflow. Daniel specifically asked about CLI tools to sync backup data onto the target. Let's walk through what a typical setup looks like with each of these.
Let's start with Borg, since that's the one I know best. The basic flow is Borg init to create a repository, then Borg create to make a backup, then Borg prune to clean up old ones. The init step sets up encryption. You pick a passphrase, and Borg derives a key from it. Lose the passphrase. Lose your backups. That's not a bug, it's a feature. But it means you need to store that passphrase somewhere safe and separate from the backups themselves.
The create command is where the exclusion patterns come in, which connects directly to Daniel's question about what directories to ignore. Borg uses a pattern file or command line excludes. A typical Borg create command for a full system backup might look like Borg create colon, colon, etc. Hyphen hostname, hyphen now, colon, colon, etc. Hyphen hostname, colon, colon, backup.s. Sorry, let me say that naturally. You'd specify your repository, give the archive a name with a timestamp, and then list the paths you want to back up. Usually slash, meaning the whole file system, and then a pile of exclude patterns.
That brings us to the exclusion list, which is really the heart of Daniel's question. He wants to know what parts of the Linux file system you can safely ignore. And the answer is, there's a standard set of directories that are either virtual file systems, temporary data, or caches that will be regenerated on a new system.
Let's go through them. The big one is /proc. That's a virtual file system that exposes kernel and process information. It doesn't exist on disk. If you try to back it up, you're just capturing a snapshot of running system state that will be meaningless on restore. Same with /sys. That's the kernel's view of devices and drivers. Virtual, regenerated at boot. /dev is device files. You don't back those up. The kernel creates them dynamically, and modern systems use devtmpfs or udev to populate them. /run is a tmpf's mount on most systems. It's in-memory runtime data that disappears on reboot. /tmp is temporary files. By definition, anything in there is expendable.
Those five, proc, sys, dev, run, tmp, are the ones that are universally safe to exclude. They'll either be empty on restore or populated automatically by the system. Then there's the next tier, which are directories that contain data you probably don't want to back up, but might want to think about. /mnt and /media are mount points. If you're backing up slash and you have an NFSS, share mounted at /mnt/nas, you might accidentally back up the entire NASA. You want to exclude mount points or use borg create with the -x flag, which tells it to stay on one file system and not cross mount points.
The -x flag is the safer approach. It automatically excludes all mounted file systems, external drives, NFSS mounts, everything that isn't the root file system. If you do want to include a specific mount, you can explicitly add it as a separate path. But for a system backup, -x prevents a lot of disasters.
Then there's /lost/found. That's where FOSC puts recovered file fragments after a file system check. If you're restoring a backup, you don't want to restore corrupted fragments. /varcache is package manager caches. Apt-cache on Debian and Ubuntu. DNF-cache on Fedora. Those will be repopulated the first time you run apt-update. /var/tmp is like tmp, but supposed to survive reboots. In practice, it's still temporary and you can exclude it.
/var/log can go either way. Logs are useful for debugging, but they grow without bound and they're rarely needed after a restore. I'd exclude them from the full system backup and handle them separately if you need log retention for compliance or debugging. On a home server, you probably don't.
Then there's the Docker-specific question. Daniel's running Docker containers. Where does Docker store its data, and how does that interact with a file-based backup?
This is the part where a naive whole system backup can go wrong. Docker stores everything under /var/lib/docker. That includes images, container file systems, volumes, and metadata. If you just back up /var/lib/docker while containers are running, you're backing up inconsistent state. Docker volumes that are being written to by a database container, you're getting a file system snapshot mid-transaction. That's the same problem as backing up a running database without proper tooling.
The recommendation is, exclude /var/lib/docker from the file level backup and handle Docker data separately. For volumes, you'd use Docker's volume backup approaches. Either stop the container, backup the volume directory, restart, or use a tool that does application consistent snapshots. For the container configurations, the Docker compose files, the Docker files, the environment files, those live outside /var/lib/docker in Daniel's home directory or in /opt or wherever he keeps them, and those do get picked up by the system backup.
That's exactly the split. Your infrastructure as code, the compose files, the configs, gets backed up with the system. Your stateful data, the volumes, gets backed up with application-aware tooling. And your container images don't need to be backed up at all because you can pull them again from Docker Hub or your private registry. They're rebuildable artifacts.
Unless you're using custom-built images that aren't pushed anywhere. In that case, you'd want to back up the Docker files and build context, not the built image layers.
The principle is, back up the source of truth, not the derived artifact. Alright, so we've got our exclusion list. Let's talk about the restore side, because Daniel mentioned the gold standard objective. If the server is physically destroyed, you provision a new Ubuntu box, move your stuff over, and everything resumes working. What does that actually look like?
It looks like a sequence that you should test before you need it. Step 1. Fresh Ubuntu install on the new hardware. Step 2, install your backup tool, Borg or Restic or Copia. Step 3, restore your backup to a temporary location, not directly over the running system. Because if you restore /etc over a running system's etc, you're going to have a bad time. Step 4. Selectively restore the directories you need. /etc. for system configuration. /home for user data. /var for application state that isn't in Docker volumes. /opt if you installed things there. And any custom directories you created.
The selective restore is key, and it's where the Fusee mount feature really shines. You mount the backup archive, and you can browse it like a live file system. You can diff it against your current system. You can copy individual files. You don't have to do an all-or-nothing restore. For etc., you might want to restore specific config files rather than the entire directory, because the fresh Ubuntu install has its own etc. with current defaults.
Then step 5, restore your Docker volumes from their separate backups. Step 6, run Docker Compose up and verify everything works. The whole process, if you've practiced it, should take maybe an hour. If you haven't practiced it, it'll take a day and you'll discover that you forgot to back up the SSSL certificate in /etc/letsencrypt or the system unit file you hand-wrote 6 months ago.
Let's talk about Let's Encrypt specifically, because that's a gotcha. The certificates live in /etc/letsencrypt, and they're symlinked from a directory with a timestamp in the name. If you just restore the files, the symlinks might break. And certbot stores some state in /varlib/letsencrypt too. The safer approach is to exclude Let's Encrypt from the backup and just request new certificates after restore. But if you're running a service that can't tolerate even a few minutes of certificate downtime during restore, you need to back up the entire Let's Encrypt directory structure and test the restore.
That's the kind of detail that separates a backup strategy from a backup wish. Let's talk about scheduling. Daniel mentioned cron jobs and then corrected himself to system timers, which is the modern way to do it on Ubuntu. What does a well-designed backup schedule look like?
For a home server, I like daily backups with the retention policy that keeps the last 7 dailies, 4 weeklies, and 6 monthlies. That gives you fine-grained recovery for the past week, weekly granularity for the past month, and monthly going back 6 months. For each of the 3 tools, the implementation is slightly different. Borg has Borg prune with the keep, daily, keep weekly, keep monthly flags. Restic has Restic forget with similar flags. Copia has a policy system where you define retention rules per snapshot source.
The actual scheduling mechanism, system timers, are the right answer on modern Ubuntu. You create a service unit that runs your backup script, and a timer unit that triggers it on a schedule. The timer can be set to run daily at a specific time, and you can add randomized delay, so all your servers don't hammer the backup target simultaneously. System timers also handle missed runs. If the server was off during the scheduled time, it'll run the backup when it boots.
The backup script itself should handle the case where a previous backup is still running. Borg and Restic both use repository locking. If you try to run a backup while another one is in progress, it'll fail with a lock error. Your script should catch that and either wait or skip. A simple flock on a lock file before invoking the backup command is a clean way to handle it.
Daniel also mentioned the test restore, which is the thing everyone knows they should do, and almost nobody actually does. What does a meaningful test restore look like?
The minimum viable test is, once a quarter, spin up a VMM, or a container that mimics your server, restore your latest backup, and verify that your services start. You don't need to do a full hardware restore to a physical machine, a VirtualBox V. M on your laptop is enough to catch the most common failure modes. Missing config files, broken symlinks, permission issues. The things that break are rarely the backup tool itself. They're the assumptions you made about what you were backing up.
The test restore forces you to document the restore procedure. The first time you do it, you'll discover gaps. You'll realize you forgot to back up the SSHH. Host keys. So after restore, everyone connecting to the server gets a host key mismatch warning. You'll realize your database container needs to be restored in a specific order. You'll realize the backup of your Docker volumes is 6 months old, because the volume backup script had a silent failure.
SSH host keys are a great example. They live in /etc/ssh, and if you restore them, your users don't get warnings. If you don't, they do. It's not a disaster, but it's friction. And for a home server where you're the only user, maybe you don't care. But if you're running services for family members, those host key warnings erode trust.
Let's circle back to the agentic AI angle that Daniel mentioned at the top, because I think there's something new here that changes the backup conversation. He said we've reached a golden point where it's becoming fairly easy to set up backups because AI agents can do the hard work. And I think that's right, but not in the way people might assume.
Say more about that.
The obvious use case is, you ask an agent to write you a backup script, and it spits out a bool create command with the right excludes and a system timer unit. That's useful, but it's table stakes. The more interesting thing is that agents change the economics of testing and validation. Writing the backup script was never the hard part. The hard part was maintaining it, verifying it, and actually doing the test restore. An agent can be told, every Sunday, spin up a test VM, restore last night's backup, start the services, and report back which ones are healthy. That's the kind of thing that was theoretically possible with scripting, but practically too annoying to set up. An agent makes it a one-sentence request.
That's a compelling vision, and it connects to something I've been thinking about with these backup tools. All three, Borg, Restic, Copia, have a check command that verifies the integrity of the repository. Borg check, Restic check, Copia, snapshot verify. They read through the data and confirm that all the chunks are present and uncorrupted, but almost nobody runs them regularly. An agent that runs the check weekly and alerts you if something's wrong. That's a meaningful improvement over the status quo.
The status quo being, you discover your backups are broken at the exact moment you need them, which is the worst possible time to discover that.
The agent can do one more thing that humans are bad at. It can track the size and growth rate of your backups over time and flag anomalies. If your daily backup suddenly jumps from 200 megabytes to 50 gigabytes, something changed. Maybe a log file went rogue. Maybe you accidentally downloaded a dataset into a directory that's being backed up. The agent notices and asks you about it, rather than you discovering 3 months later that your backup repository is full and backups have been silently failing.
The tooling recommendation, if I'm synthesizing all of this for Daniel's specific setup, Ubuntu Docker host wants file-based incremental, wants to push to NFSS, and also have off-site cloud storage. I think Restic or Copia are the strongest fits. Borg is excellent, but the cloud storage piece requires an extra hop. With Restic, you can run one backup job targeting your NFSS mount and a second job, or a workload sync, targeting Backblaze B2 or S3. With Copia, you can configure multiple storage backends and have it replicate automatically. The exclusion list is proc, sys, dev, run, tmp, mnt, media, lossplus, found, varcache, vertmp, and verlibdocker, with docker volumes handled separately. Schedule it with system timers, test the restore quarterly, and let an agent handle the verification and anomaly detection.
One more thing about the offsite copy. Daniel mentioned a second copy going to cloud storage. The 3-2-1 rule still applies. 3 copies of your data on 2 different media, 1 off-site. The NFSS mount is your second copy. The cloud storage is your off-site. Your live server is the first copy. But there's a subtlety with deduplicating backup tools. If your NFS repository gets corrupted, bit rot, accidental deletion, ransomware, and you've been syncing it to the cloud, you might have synced the corruption too. So the cloud copy should be a separate backup job, not a sync of the NFS repository. Restic and Copia make this easy because they can write to multiple backends natively. You run 2 separate backup commands, or you use Copia's replication feature, and you have 2 independent repositories.
That's the phrase. If your NFS repo and your cloud repo are independent, a bug in one tool or a corruption in one storage backend doesn't take out both copies. It's slightly more storage and slightly more bandwidth, but it's the difference between a backup strategy and a backup theater.
I'm writing that down. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In antiquity, the Gulf of Tajira off Djibouti was a seasonal gathering ground for whale pods whose songs, if measured in modern decibel units, would register at approximately 188 decibels, louder than a jet engine at takeoff and capable of being heard across 23 kilometers of open water.
That's a jet engine underwater. The question I want to leave listeners with is this. We've talked about the tools and the directories and the scheduling, but the real shift that agentic AI enables isn't just easier setup. It's continuous validation, For the first time, we can automate the part of backups that actually matters, proving they work, not just hoping they do. And I think that changes the calculus on what's worth backing up. If verification is cheap, you can back up more, because you'll actually know if something's broken before you need it.
That's a good place to land. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes like this one, find us at myweirdprompts.com or search for My Weird Prompts on Spotify.
Until next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.